It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Hey, folks, I'm no longer alone in the studio again. I thought Lockwood would never leave. I hope he's not listening. Of course you are, Lockwood. Welcome to Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Guys, the first time we've had a chance to meet, and here we are in the studio together, and you guys are the experts. So I'm going to be the listener, you're going to be the leaders, and let us know what it is exactly that you want to talk about this morning from Harvell and Collins.
Well, first of all, good morning, Gary, and it is our pleasure to be here with you as well.
Yep.
Right.
The way this normally works, Gary, is that we have a topic.
Enlighten me.
We have a topic we talk about, and actually we've been on the topic of titling assets over the past couple of weeks. So you're going to have to do very little but to respond to the things that we talk about.
I'm a great listener, and I love to ask simple questions.
Okay.
And, of course, we welcome calls from any of the listeners as well. If they have a question on the topic that we're talking about right now, or any topic, really, Gary will do our best to give an answer or direct them in the right direction sometimes.
Well, with that in mind, let me give the phone numbers out, let people get involved in this. 252-247-7282, 910-353-4674, and, of course, the free phone number. That's the easy one, 1-800-818-2255. If you'd like to be a part of this conversation this morning, here's your chance to get some free advice. The catchphrase is the right advice at the right time. This is going to be the free advice at the right time as well. So, guys, the stage is yours, so to put.
Last week, we had a couple callers, so we kind of got off track. A lot of times when the callers call, they ask about what's on their mind, not necessarily what's on our mind.
Yeah.
But that's great.
That can happen.
That's great. We had some excellent questions last week about transferring the home place and protecting the home from long-term health care expenses. Excellent caller, I think, from Newbern on that particular issue. But we had started talking about titling assets, and a couple weeks ago we started with the titling of real estate, the different ways you can own real estate, why that's important. We talked about a fee simple ownership interest. We talked about what's called a tenants by entirety interest, a tenants in common interest, and a joint with right of survivorship interest. And if any listeners want to go back and refresh their recollection, or if they didn't hear the conversation about that, they can tap onto our webpage at harvellandcollins.com, and all of these shows are archived on that webpage. But today, I think we'll move on and talk a little bit more about the titling of other type of assets like bank accounts, investment accounts, and then move into things like life insurance, annuities, those type of things. And we'll discuss the interplay between how your assets are titled and what happens to those assets when you pass away. A lot of people don't think about that. They think, I want to put my son or my daughter on my account so they have the right to take care of paying my bills.
You don't just inherit your parents' wealth.
Well, if a lot of times mistakes are made when accounts are set up because the issues that we're about to talk about today are not discussed at the appropriate time.
Okay.
So, Gary, that is it in a nutshell. When we are meeting with clients and we're helping them plan their estates or even potentially in their business life as well, it is very important that we look at the way in which their assets are titled, and particularly bank accounts, stock, if you will, blanket stock accounts or umbrella stock accounts that say like a stock brokerage account, everything from Merrill Lynch to Edward D. Jones to A.G. Edwards, it doesn't matter where. We now have various ways in which these accounts can be titled. And some of the popular things that get talked about, many times not at the lawyer's office, unfortunately, but with the broker or with the person helping them with their account at the bank, is that, Mr. Jones, let's put your account payable on death to your child or time on death to your child. These are called POD or TOD accounts. Wes and I call them litigation accounts because we see so many issues concerning the fact that an account gets titled POD or TOD to one particular heir, and yet the will is saying that here, divide my assets equally amongst my children or equally amongst my nieces and nephews or whatever the case might be. So you really do need to check back and dovetail, coordinate the way in which you title your personal property assets or liquid assets and the way in which your estate plan is put together. Also, when you place your loved one's name on your account, we need to remember, Gary, that you are making your account now subject to all the twists and turns of that person's life because they are an owner on your account. And so what if they die? What if they have a divorce? Mm-hmm. What if they have an illness that creates a significant liability? What if they have a creditor issue or a bankruptcy? All of these kinds of things are now going to affect your monies because you added that person's name to your account and they have an ownership interest in the account. So the power of attorney, which we talk about so often on this program, is really one of the most critical and operative and needed documents that a good lawyer drafts. And it gives your loved one the authority to get to your account and to pay your bills and to satisfy any debts, pay any taxes, anything of that nature with your monies. And the power of attorney, after registered, gives your agent the authority to do that. It is not necessary that your loved one necessarily be titled on the account.
Is there any gray area here, or is this an exact science? I mean, if you make a mistake, can you go in halfway through the process and have an attorney fix it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. We're correcting these registrations, you know, on a daily basis, Gary, because they get made out there in our real world, which is a good thing. Without you know the estate plan, if you will, being right there in front of the client at the time, and these things just, you know, accounts also are changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bank accounts will change, or you sell a piece of property and you suddenly have, you know, some extra money and you put it in the bank for a while. Or maybe you inherit money from a parent and you then title it with your wife in such a way. You know, things are always changing much. It seems there's more movement with regard to our personal property assets than maybe with our land assets.
Mm.
Those tend to, once they get titled, kind of stay in that posture for a while.
Right.
But stocks, bonds, securities, cash accounts, things of this nature tend to kind of be a little bit more fluid.
True, true.
So an example of how this can become a problem when we're dealing with an estate, when mm-hmm. someone has passed away and, you know, let's say we represent the estate. Let's say the executor has come to us, hired us to deal with, you know, the laws of the state of North Carolina as it relates to administering the estate. Mm-hmm. An example of this type of problem would be, let's say that the will leaves the estate equally to all four kids, but the account or the accounts were set up to pass either joint right with right of survivorship or POD or TOD to the one kind of go-to child. And there is usually the go-to child, and it might be the local child, it might be the one who comes by more often, or the one who's more attuned to business issues and paying bills and right. those kind of things. Well, if that mistake was made where we set up this account as joint with right of survivorship, for example, to this one child, when really the intent was to just let this child have the right to be able to access that account to pay my bills, to right. pay the deceased person's bills, then if we have things that have to be paid through the estate, if we had debts that have to be paid, if we have maybe credit card debt, maybe medical bills at the end of life,
right.
claims against the estate, But we don't have hardly any assets to pay those claims through the administration of the estate. But the account, let's say it's a $300,000 or $400,000 account, passes to this one child. Then, if that one child wants to take those funds and put them in her pocket and ride off into the sunset, then that's going to make things very difficult for the estate. The estate would then have to probably engage in some form of litigation in order to get our hands on those funds to pay the debts.
There's no significant checks or balances to keep that from happening?
No, not at all. And that's only one part of the issue, one part of the problem. If that child also wanted to just take those funds so that the other three brothers or sisters did not receive their fair share of the inheritance because the will said leave everything equally, they're legally entitled to do that. Now, that sounds like something that might be far-fetched, but that's a true story. That's a case I've dealt with before, and it's a case I deal with
more
all
than
the time. I mean,
more than you wish
those
to.
Issues are always floating around our office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gary, just a slight twist. Those facts are very accurate, as Wes has just said, but a slight twist on that one is this one. Let's say that there is, in fact, you know, a couple of $100,000 and a paid-for home, but the two CDs, if you will, are payable on death to the three children. So immediately upon the death, these CDs pay out equally now to the three children. That's the way Mama registered or Grandmama registered.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they pay out to the three children. There is no money in the estate to bury Mama or to file her final tax return or to do anything with regard to getting her affairs resolved. Okay, the money went out to the three children equally. That's a good thing. But one of the three takes his funds or her funds and is not willing to give any funds back to the estate so as to pay for the expenses. The other two are very willing. One of them is extremely responsible and will do anything, and so is the second one. But there's that third one, you know. There's always that fly in the ointment.
Sure.
Thing,
one in every family.
And that's the one that won't ante up his or her fair share.
Yeah.
And so, bingo, here we are. You know, with a conflict in what would have otherwise been a very straightforward, simple file. The assets would have come into the estate and gone out a third, a third, and a third, but the executor would have had the monies in the estate to settle the estate, pay the last expenses.
Like you said, it would be great if we all lived in that perfect world where everything just, you know, functioned the way it's supposed to and everybody knew their place in life. 7:47, got to take a quick break here, Wes and Cecil, and pay some bills ourselves. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, 252-247-7282, 910-353-4674, and, of course, 1-800-818-2255. That'll get you online with us, and you can talk to these attorneys and find out if you're making the right decisions. All right, be back in just a moment right here on Coastal Daybreak. Welcome back to Coastal Daybreak. I'm Gary Dean in for Ben Ball. And we've been talking with Cecil Howard and Wes Collins. These are the legal minds behind not only, I guess, the legal sense of keeping the books balanced when families start transferring one fund to another because your mom and dad have departed this mortal coil, and you're left with the responsibility of picking up the pieces and making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and everybody gets their fair share. Doesn't always work that way, guys.
Not always. Gary, let's go back and revisit for a minute this durable power of attorney. A durable power of attorney is a written legal document whereby we appoint someone, usually our son or daughter or spouse, our significant person in our life, our loved one, if you will, to be able to pay our bills and to sign legal documents for us if we are unable to. It's a very significant document. It needs to be very specifically drafted and have broad grants of authority. But once it is signed and it becomes operative, then this document allows us to be the agent for our principal. And it allows us and it gives us access to their accounts. This is what is critical. You're able to go in and take the CD and move it to a power of attorney account. Again, it's an agency account. You are not the owner. You are the agent for your mother. Okay? You're able to register your name on the checking account or the savings account, the money market account, whatever the case might be, so that again, you are the agent on the account. You have authority over the account, but you are not the owner. When mom then dies, the account, the power of attorney is no longer operative and the account is in the estate and the executor takes over.
That's right.
Yeah.
So how do we end up in a position where we put our child on the account as a joint owner as opposed to just a signatory under the power of attorney? Now, the way I think that normally works is that, you know, the family goes in, sits down with maybe the broker or sometimes the assistant of the broker or maybe sometimes the bank teller.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's usually just a kind of an entry-level position person who's helping with these titling
issues.
Hard
to have confidence in that, though.
Well, you know, and that's just the way the system is set up, in my opinion. You know, if you're just changing the title of your assets, a lot of times you're not going right to your main broker person, you know, because it's paperwork. So I think that what happens is that they, you know, then pull out the document where it's a change of beneficiary document or a change of title document.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those canned documents from the ones I've seen over the years have a couple of options on them. And one of them is joint with right of survivorship. One of them is POD and one of them is TOD. So I think that casually the decision is made, well, if you want your daughter or your son to access the account, let's just make them join on the account and they can access the account.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually, you know, obviously I'm not sitting in on the conversation, but I can glean from what transpires and what, you know, what we see afterwards. I think that what happens is that one of those boxes gets checked and there's never any discussion about the things that we're talking about today. I think that's the simple answer for why those mistakes are made.
Yeah.
So the families, in listening, you know, to what we're talking about today, I think that they need to go look at their accounts. They need to look at how they're set up. Are they joint with right of survivorship? Are they POD? Are they TOD? Is this something that we're thinking we're wanting to do, you know, this year? Maybe by the end of this year, it's kind of that time of year where families get together and talk about their finances, hopefully, or talk about whatever is going on in their life. And I think the stop sign needs to go up when we go to the point where mom or dad get to the age, or grandma or grandpa get to the age where someone is going to need to help them take care of their finances.
Mm-hmm.
And some questions need to be asked about, you know, can we set up this account so that, you know, the son or the daughter can just access the account, but they don't have joint ownership.
Let me stop you right there, guys, for just a moment, because I do have to squeeze in one more break.
Okay.
I do think that communication is the most important part. If families would just talk to one another, they can probably solve a lot more problems than just leaving everything up in the air.
Right.
We need to talk to each other. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk more with Cecil Harvard and Wes Collins, Harvell and Collins. So stay tuned. Coastal Daybreak coming right back.
The law is increasingly complex, and the growing staff of Harvell & Collins stands ready to untangle your legal challenges. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, along with associates Russell Alexander and Andrew Foster, practicing in all areas of civil practice, including estate planning, elder law and asset protection, representation of the elderly, collections and foreclosures, corporate and business, and also civil trial practice in these and all other civil matters. Call to arrange your free initial consultation at 252-726-9050. 5-800-530-5050. Plus, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins answer your questions live each Tuesday morning at 7:30 on Let's Talk Legal. Tune in to Coastal Daybreak Tuesday mornings at 7:30 on the talk station and call in with your legal questions.
I have an elderly mother who's had a series of mild strokes over the last year, and my mother has no will, no power of attorney, nothing. You got any suggestions of what I can do to change that?
If it's your question, it's important to Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. I've got to, you know, get the pronunciation right here. We're talking about Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. The right advice at the right time, and you're getting it this morning, and I wish that maybe I didn't have a chance to get the phone numbers out there enough to get you into the program, but I hope that you're paying attention to the advice that's coming your way this morning, because it does cost you absolutely nothing, and it's very few times in this life you'll get something for nothing, and you're getting it this morning. So, guys, well, continue first, where you left off. We got about 2 minutes left.
First of all, Gary, you're doing a very fine job, and we appreciate it.
You're being nice, but thank you.
I think the bottom line here, as Wes and I conclude in this 2 minutes, is just that a couple of things. First of all, we encourage our listeners to be aware of these issues, to look at your accounts, your bank accounts, your stock accounts, your annuities, your life insurance, your IRAs, and check your beneficiaries. And if you have questions about that, then, you know, give us a call. Give your other law, give your lawyer a call if you have one, and just confirm that that these account registrations and these beneficiaries are consistent with your overall goal at the end of the day. The second thing, of course, is to make sure that you have this well-drafted power of attorney, and that you understand the significance of that document and the way in which that gives your loved one total authority and access to your account. I find clients are just amazed to hear this. They really do believe that they need to put their son or daughter on their account so that they have access. We hear it every day. Well, I added my son or daughter to my accounts because he needed to pay my bills, or she needed. Well, you know, the accounts are a couple of $100,000. You know, sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't need to do that. You can use that power of attorney to allow your son or daughter to get to the account without putting them on there as the owner of the account.
So misguided trust can be a detriment. So we have to be careful about that. The phone number, gentlemen, 252-726-9050. That'll get you in touch with Harvell and Collins, our guest this morning, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. The right advice at the right time. Gentlemen, thank you so much for that information and that education this morning. We're going to take a quick break here, check in with Fox News at the top of the hour, come back. We've got a lot more on the show as we move into the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Gary Dean. This is Coastal Daybreak. Stay tuned, folks. More to come.